Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
A special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 8 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. I am Carl Amari, your host. This is program 252 in the series. It's January 27th. It's a Saturday, and we'll be here for 3 hours playing your favorite classic radio shows. To my right is the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
What's up, Carl? Good to be here.
Good to
always
be here. We have Curtis Koch, our producer, in the booth. What's up, Curtis? How are
you? Not much. How are you guys doing?
All right.
So happy to have you.
I'm happy to be back.
Yeah, we're good. And you know what, Lisa?
What, Carl?
This is the last weekend of our Celebrity Scoop jingle. We are switching up our contest. So next week, it's Cat's Pride.
Crack the quote.
Crack the quote.
So for everybody who loved the jingle, we're so sorry we're retiring it. For everybody who was slightly annoyed by the jingle, it got to just be a little bit tired, so we're moving onward. Crack the quote. We will start next week. I will do a Facebook post and explain everything during the week on our Facebook
page.
Let's
see how many times we can say it fast. Cat's Pride, crack the quote. Cat's Pride.
You can't say it once. You can't say it once. It's okay. But in any event, why don't you tell them what crack the quote means?
Crack the quote. Well, we're going to have people call in. We're going to say a movie, like let's say The Maltese Falcon, right? And the people will call in if they think they know The Maltese Falcon. And then Lisa is going to read you three quotes. They'll be short from one of them will be from the movie The Maltese Falcon. The other two will be made up. And you
from my brain.
Yeah, from her brain, which is very large. She has a huge brain.
We're going to have some fun with it.
Yeah,
though.
It's gigantic. It almost looks like Quasimoto.
Yeah, you could see it in there?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so she will give a correct quote and then two fake quotes, well, sort of like fake news.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Or two truths and a lie.
Yeah, two truths and a lie.
Or two false and one right one in this case.
All of the above.
Exactly what it'll be.
And if you get it right, then you win.
You
and
win.
If you don't get it right, you still win.
You still win.
So that's how we play.
But you have bragging rights if you get it right.
Yeah, and it's fun. It's fun to play. It's
so
fun to be
fun.
On the air, and it's
so
fun to hang out with Carl
this
and Lisa.
Will be the second to the last Celebrity Scoop now we're
going
to
this
do.
Is our last weekend today and tomorrow's Celebrity Scoop. Then we are going to retire it and move on.
All right. Well, tonight we'll play Fibber McGee and Molly from 1946, The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, Good Detective from 1950. Then it's Fort Laramie, Good Western from 1956, starring Raymond Byrne. It's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming film Venom, an American superhero film based on the Marvel Comics character Venom.
What do they
and
win?
The winner, Curtis, what will they win?
I still have to print out the sheet. I'm pretty sure it's a MyPillow.
All
right, let's go with a MyPillow.
My
guaranteed
pillow.
The most comfortable pillow you will ever own.
All right.
I own one. You own one.
Yeah.
And so you should, too. So you can call in.
I own two, but one never gets used.
Oh, that's so sad. You can put them both on top of each other. That
okay,
way they
good.
Both get used.
The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actress is heard here talking to Casey Affleck's character in Manchester by the Sea.
I know you've been around and
I've just been getting Patrick settled in.
It seems like he's doing pretty good, huh, considering?
Yeah, considering.
I really like her.
All right. Who is that very lovely actress? Give us a call, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner, and that person will win a MyPillow. Be right back.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again one more time.
I know you've been around, and
I've just been getting Patrick settled in.
It seems like he's doing pretty good, huh, considering?
All right.
We've got Donald on the phone. Hi, Donald.
Hello.
Glad you called in. Good to.
Oh yeah, me too.
Good to hear from you. Who is that actress?
Michelle Williams.
You are right, Donald. Michelle Williams is the right answer. And we are thrilled to give you a MyPillow. We've been talking about him all week. They are guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you will ever own. You can check it out at MyPillow.com. And thank you so much for calling in and starting out our show with us tonight.
Okay, thank you very much.
Take care, thank Donald. You.
All right, big winner. He won a MyPillow. Ah, that's a nice gift, Lisa.
Isn't it?
It is.
I bought it for you.
I know.
I just ordered a travel size MyPillow.
Well, there you go.
For the airplane.
Nice.
So, and I didn't have
Where
any...
do you think you're going? Did you
well,
ask
Well, I have
me
a couple things coming up.
Did you?
We'll talk about it.
Did you get
it.
My permission?
I didn't.
Okay. Well, that's because you're sassy.
I know.
Just like the 70-year-olds on Pat Tomasillo's show.
That's right.
Hey, we have a text in line. If you would like to text in while we're playing these classic radio shows, we love hearing from our listeners. The text in line is 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Please text us. We love it. And we are going to now play Fibber McGee and Molly. Sound good, Lisa?
Sounds great.
Going back to 79 Wistful Vista. That's where they lived. And this broadcast is from January 22nd, 1946. They're celebrating Pioneer Day. Here is Jim and Marion Jordan in part one of Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. The makers of Johnson's Wax products for home and industry present Fibber McGee and Molly, aided and abetted by Bill Thompson, Gail Gordon, Arthur Q. Bryan, B. Benaderet, and yours truly, Harlow Wilcox. The writing is by Don Quinn and Phil Leslie, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra. I know for a fact that literally millions of women all over the country use Johnson's Glow Coat to give their linoleum floors that shining, well-groomed look. But seeing how easy it is to have lovely floors the Glow Coat way, what beats me is why every woman doesn't take advantage of this easy-to-use wax floor polish. There's no rubbing or buffing with Glow Coat. You simply apply, spread it around, and let it dry. Come back in 20 minutes to find your floors beautifully wax-polished and fairly gleaming, never streaked or uneven. And that tough, shining coat of self-polishing Glow Coat adds greatly to the life of your linoleum. It keeps its colors and patterns bright and new-looking far longer. Linoleum manufacturers themselves and leading housekeeping authorities recommend Glow Coat for all your linoleum surfaces, as well as for composition, rubber, tile, or finished wood floors. Why don't you find out what lovely floors you can have in a jiffy with Johnson's self-polishing Glow Coat? When children run around the streets with toy pistols yelling, bang, bang, you're dead, they call it cops and robbers. But when grown-ups do it, it's Pioneer Day in Wistful Vista. And here, all dressed up for the celebration, we find Fibber McGee and Molly.
Do I look as silly as I feel in this calico dress and sunbonnet, McGee?
Matter of fact, kiddo, you look real pretty.
Uh-huh.
Regular prairie flower. Hey, where's my sheriff's badge? I gotta have my sheriff... Oh, here it is, here it is.
I hope those horse pistols aren't really loaded, McGee. Hey, you're nice to have hanging around, but I'd rather you did it with your feet on the ground.
No, I just got blank cartridges in them. Gotta do a lot of shooting when they hold up the bank this afternoon.
When who holds up the bank?
Oh, didn't I tell you? We're reenacting the big bank holdup of 1897, when Bart Younger and his gang held up the Ranchers National and got away with $20,000 in gold and kissed the banker's daughter on the way up.
Did they chase the robbers?
The banker's daughter did. Yeah, she chased him all over the territory, caught him and made him marry her. After that, he went around the country lecturing on how crime doesn't pay. You see, she
McGee,
was kind of... Huh?
Why do you keep leaning over forward like that?
I can't help it. These high-heeled boots got me off balance. Have to swing my guns a little farther behind, I guess.
Tell me more about this holdup. Who's doing it?
Mort Toops and Wallace Wimple are going to play the parts of Bart Younger and his brother.
Yeah?
I meet them in the street as they come out, and I shoot them down dead. You see, I'm...
Come in, stranger. Come in a-shooting or come in a-smiling. The welcome you asked for is the welcome you get.
Oh, I'll rope me for a doggie if it ain't old Doc Gamble. Howdy, Doc.
Come in and set a spell, Sawbones. Ma, shove that pile of bar traps away from the fire so's Doc can hunker down and warm his britches.
Oh, stop it, you Saturday matinee cowhand. You're about as Western as the Fulton Fish Market.
Ooh.
I'm willing to go along with this Pioneer Day malarkey for 24 hours, but I'm developing an allergy to blue jeans and bow legs. Even legitimate bow legs, like yours.
Did you know he was going to reenact the bank holdup this afternoon, Doctor?
Mort Toops and Wallace Wimple are going to play Bart Younger and his brother, Doc. I meet him outside the bank and I shoot him down dead. Going to be newsreels took of it and everything.
Oh, fine. Yeah. Fine. You'll be so busy mugging into the cameras they could walk off with the whole bank. You probably even fancied yourself getting a movie contract out of this.
Well, now that sure would be nice, wouldn't it, Paul? Might stick a big wad of chewing tobacco in your face and tell them you're Billy the Cod.
All I can say is you better have plenty .45 caliber cork plugs ready today, Sawbones. When Sheriff McGee starts throwing lead, every Boy Scout compass in town is going to be pointing straight at the cemetery.
Well, I don't first thought up this crackpot idea of Pioneer Day, rum-dum, but it's paying off handsomely for me. I've treated 3 cases of spur burns, 2 items of bar stool bursitis, and right now I've got a sachet down to the hotel for a strange case of a man with 2 hearts.
Heavenly days, 2 hearts.
2 hearts, 2 clubs, and 1 diamond. Both the hearts were aces.
Ooh.
A thing like that can shorten a man's life considerably. So long now, Jimson Weed.
Great old Doc hasn't got any romance in his system. He thinks this Pioneer Day celebration is kind of childish.
Well, you know? I'm inclined to agree with him, dearie. I know I'll be glad to get out of this long calico skirt.
What?
Every time I look down and can't find my feet, I get panicky. When do we go downtown?
Anytime now. The bank hold up a schedule to start for any minute.
Get ready to crouch and draw, partner. That knock ain't familiar.
Stand in front of me, Ma, so as I can draw a bead on the varmints over your shoulder.
Use both guns then, Pa. Always wanted my ears pierced for earrings. Come in.
Well, what do you know?
Mr. Oldtimer.
Hello there, kid.
Well. Well, I'm glad to see you again, Oldtimer. I hear you've been in the Navy all this time.
In the CBs, Johnny. That's the men's department of the Navy.
Well, you're just in time to celebrate Pioneer Day in Wistful Vista, Mr. Oldtimer.
Pioneer Day, eh?
Yep.
Wondered why everybody was wearing them high-heeled boots and sombreros. Reminds me when I first come to this town 9 to 50 years ago. Come out with the Lewis and Clark expedition.
Horse feathers. The Lewis and Clark expedition was in 1803.
I says Lewis and Clark, Johnny.
Huh?
I come out with my brother Lewis to clerk in his grocery store.
Well, I guess you were sort of a pioneer here at that, weren't you, Mr. Oldtimer?
Daughter, I was one of the founders of the town. I'd have been here even earlier, but I caught the wrong schooner. Mine had a Mickey in it.
Well, how'd you like the Navy, Oldtimer, frankly?
Frankly, Johnny, I could take it or leave it. I could take it just about as long as I did and leave it with a glad cry. Yep. Had about all the bossing around from Gold Braid I could stand.
You mean commissioned officers?
No, I mean them blonde gals around the dock. Oh. You know me, kids. I'm a man's man till a woman shows up. Then I'm a girl's boy. Any girl's boy.
By the way, whatever became of your girl, Bessie?
Bessie? Bessie. 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 Was she the one with the big bay window that she used to wave to the fellers out of? Was Bessie the little one that always carried the bunch of flowers so she could thumb her nosegay at you when you... Oh, shucks, kids, I don't remember Bessie.
Well, you always were getting engaged and unengaged to different ones, Mr. Oldtimer. You've broken more hearts than the man who cuts the celery at the Why Pay More cafeteria.
That's pretty good, daughter, but that ain't the way I heard it. One feller says to t'other feller, says, if these strikes keep up, it's going to be a long time before you can get a new car, ain't it? Yep, says t'other feller, but it's a great thing for the shoe industry. The pedestrians live so much longer. See you later, kid.
Goodness, they certainly have got the town decorated, haven't they? It looks like a Roy Rogers movie set.
Yeah, some of us characters is just as quick on the trigger, too. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Molly, Molly, Molly. Get a load of old lady Carstairs in the pioneer costume. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Ain't she a dish?
Makes her look a little stout, doesn't
it? Ooh.
And if you make any remarks about a pig in a poke bonnet, I...
Oh, no, no, no. I never thought of anything making...
Well, hello there, Mrs. Carstairs.
How do you do, Mrs. McGee and Mr. McGee?
Never mind the Mr., ma'am. I ain't no dude. You're addressing the sheriff of this here town. Homestead and hereabouts, are ye?
Why, sure, Paul. The Carstairses was right early pioneers hereabouts, wasn't they, Miss Carstairs?
Oh, yes. Grandpapa was a favorite with the Indians. He wore toupees, you know, which made scalping him a very simple operation. In the Cherokee Indian language, he was known as Old Cabin Keep Getting New Roof.
Never cotton much to redskins myself, ma'am. Even now, a coat of sunburn makes me reach for my Remington.
Paul, tell Miss Carstairs about the time you and Kit Carson met the Apaches at Sidewinder Gulch.
I don't recollect any such story, Ma.
It ain't a matter of memory, Pa. It's a matter of imagination.
Oh, sure it is. Well, sir, ma'am, it was just about sundown in the foothills of the Superstitions, in the heart of the Apache country. Me and Kit Carson was sitting around the water hole when all of a sudden, nothing happened. That made us suspicious. So we looked around, and there surrounding us on all sides was 200 Apaches.
Good heavens, Mr. McGee, how interesting.
What'd you do, Paul? Kill them off?
Nope. Kit started talking sign language to them.
Sign language?
Yep. First, Kit says, there's a ford in your future. And the Indian whips right back with, standard stations have clean restrooms. So Kit says, grade crossing ahead. And the engine says, ever tried Johnson's wax on floors and furniture? Well, sir, we knew they had us there. On account of we didn't have any floors or furniture. So we clumb onto our cayuses and rid back to Fort Dodge.
You know, I always wondered what was meant by sign language.
Oh, Paul was expert at it, Miss Carstairs. Him and Wild Bill Board Hickox. You gotta be going now?
Yes, if you'll excuse me. I must be getting down to the tailor shop.
Having some clothes made, Millicent?
Not for myself, my dear. I'm having a little pair of blue jeans made for my fox terrier.
Blue jeans for your fox terrier? What's the idea, Karsty?
Oh, it's just in the spirit of Pioneer Day, Mr. McGee.
Huh?
I thought it would be appropriate if his wagon was covered. Well, nice to see you. Good day.
That's Betty Rubble right there, Bea Benaderet as that character. On Fibber, McGee and Molly, January 22nd, 1946, we'll get back to all the fun and hijinks in just a few minutes. First, these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
I have this piano thing down pat, you know?
Yeah, you're good, and you do it exactly the same
what
way
think,
every
Chris?
Week.
You like that?
Yeah, it was pretty spot on.
Yeah.
I'll give you that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's consistent.
Talented person at the piano, what can I tell you?
You're good. You are
quite
good.
A pianist. aren't I? Huh?
We're keeping the show clean.
Yes, we are. So Lisa was able to figure out the text in line here. There was an issue with it. We weren't getting your texts, but now we are. So way to go, Lisa.
Thanks, Carl.
We had a couple of technical difficulties. We had like outside noise happening earlier at the top of the hour.
That was not from either up here. At least I don't think it was.
You know,
I think
it's the Curtis, ghosts. When Carl walks in, there's always technical issues. So you should just know that's the case. And
just be prepared for it from here on out.
You know, Curtis, this building is haunted. You know that, right?
Well, that would explain it. They're obviously coming after you then, aren't they?
It's time to leave.
Yeah.
Let's get out of here.
We were talking to the security guard out there, and he was talking about how when he walks around at night, doors just slam and things like that in this building. He right? Wasn't he saying that?
He was. That's because he saw you, so we just slammed the door and hoped that you wouldn't follow him. I think that's what he meant.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
All right, we're listening to Fibber, McGee, and Molly. Let's go back to January 22nd, 1946 for the conclusion. Jim and Mary and Jordan now, Fibber, McGee, and Molly.
Oh, brother, if his wagon was covered. Did you ever hear a worse joke?
No, but I bet we will in the next 3 minutes. Incidentally, just where are we going, McGee?
Down to the Bon-Ton department store. Now, that's across the street from the bank. You see, in the old days, the Bon-Ton was the last chance saloon. Real rugged joint.
Oh?
Now, when the bank holdup starts, I step out from the door and I start throwing lead right at him, see? Then the bank...
Heavenly days, what's that?
It's across the street there. Guy in the frock coat and checkered vest in the back of that buckboard.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
He's probably selling Princess Mahula's marvelous snake oil for man and beast. Come on, let's go over there.
All right, folks, step right up to the tailgate while I expound the wonders of this magic product. Absolutely and positively the greatest discovery of the modern age.
Wilcox!
What on earth is he selling, as if I couldn't guess?
Hurry, 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 ladies and gentlemen. Step right up with your money in your hand. Each and every one of you will want a container of this marvelous labor-saving preparation. The scientific discovery that makes your life worth living and your home worth living in.
Go ahead and ask the man, Grandma.
Is it good for corn, son?
I'm glad you asked me that, Mother. This amazing product is wonderful for corns, bunions, and housemaids' needs. It brings such relief from housework that such small ailments are completely forgotten in the joy of living. Get your container of Johnson's Wax before we're sold out, folks. Try it on your floors, furniture, woodwork, harness and saddles, rifle butts and luggage. See how it protects, preserves, and saves you hours of housework. And now, while I pass among you with this marvelous invention, and remember, only 9 containers to a customer today, Hambone will play a few musical gems on his old banjo. Hambone, if you please.
Yeah. Just a minute there, Slicker. Just a minute there.
Hold on there.
Ah, the sheriff. Yes. Get the horses ready, Hambone. What's the matter, Sheriff?
Well, Paul wants to know effing you got yourself a peddling license for this here medicine show, stranger.
License, ma'am?
You heard correct, stranger. Failing you got a license, I gotta take you to the calaboose. I represent the law hereabouts. We don't aim to have no fly-by-night drummers taking trade from the local merchants. We aim to build a little church in this here valley. Come now, son. Do I see your license or do you see our hoosegow?
I'll see you later. Let's go, Hambone. Hit the trail.
Well, you can't get away from there.
Why, you was aiming kind of high, weren't you, Paul?
Yes, Ma didn't want to wing the young'un. He might grow up to be a useful citizen yet. What time you think it is?
Well, I can't tell, Paul. Can't see the sun on account of this here sunbonnet.
Yep. Often thought of getting me a pocket watch. The chucks, they're all made way back east, and they got different time back there. Have to sit down.
Oh, McGee, look, here comes Mr. Wimple. Hello, Mr. Wimple.
Oh, hi, Wimp.
Hello, folks. My, isn't this Pioneer Day exciting?
Yeah, you betcha. You all set to reenact the bank holdup, Wimp?
Oh, yes, indeed, Mr. McGee.
Good.
Mark Toops and I, we're going to dash up on our horses.
Oh.
But we're coming in his Buick instead because horses always make me sneeze. We're both going to wear bananas over our faces, you know.
Bandanas, Mr. Wimple.
No, bananas, Mrs. McGee. We throw the skins down to foil pursuit.
Sweetie Face going to be watching the scene, Wimp?
Well, I'm sure I don't know, Mr. McGee. She may be too tired from her dancing to come downtown.
Dancing, Mr. Wimple? She taking a dancing lesson?
Well, I suppose you might call it that, Mrs. McGee. One of the power lines fell down in that windstorm last night, and Sweetie Face tried to pick it up this morning. When I left, she was still hanging onto it and dancing around like everything.
Why, my gosh, Wimp, she might be electrocuted that way.
Yes.
Ah, my. Is she still mistreating you, Mr. Wimple?
Oh, we have our little moments, Mrs. McGee. She gets impulsive, and I lose my temper, I'm afraid.
Oh.
Last night, after one of our arguments, I went downtown and bought 5 pounds of raw meat.
Well, good for you, Wimp. Did you eat it all?
Oh, no. I put it on my eye, Mr. McGee. Well, goodbye now. I'll see you at the bank.
You know, McGee, one of these days, Mr. Wimple is going to
hold
turn
it,
on...
Hold it, hold it. Look yonder. Here comes Panaman Perry Bodkin and his pitch-pipe posse. Must be a-trailing somebody.
Here they come, riding hard, chasing rustlers across the prairie land.
Yee-hoo!
Sheriff's man lost the trail of that cattle rustling band.
Whoa! Which way did they go?
They went that-a-way.
Which way did they go?
She says they went that-a-way.
Oh, they went that-a-way.
Which way did they go?
They went that-a-way.
Which way did they go?
They went this-a-way, that-a-way, where-a-way, there-a-way, that-a-way. Bandits robbed the stage and drilled the sheriff, stole 10 grand in gold. Get 'em, boys, before the trail gets cold.
Which way did they go?
They went that-a-way.
Which way did they go?
They went that-a-way.
Which way did they go?
They went north-a-way, south-a-way, east-a-way, west-a-way, that-a-way. Can bet they'll catch 'em in the end as off again they go at the Western Picture Show. On today, kids in line paid their dime, and they'll ride the old range till supper time.
Which way to go?
They went that away.
Which way to go?
They went that away.
Which way to go?
They went giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, that away. Bandits busting banks and blowing safes and laughing at the law, picking fights and cheating on the draw.
Which way to go?
They went that away.
Which way to go?
They went that away.
Which way to go?
They went bully bump, bully bump, bully bump, bully bump, that away. Kids are rootin', tootin', shootin' from their saddles on the aisle at the Western Picture Show.
Well, it's just about time for the gunplay to start, isn't it, McGee?
Yeah, and I hope those newsreel guys are on their toes, too. I told them to focus on my left profile. I told him to focus on my left profile on account of because,
well, howdy there, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Mayor, ma curtsy to the mayor.
Howdy, Your Honor. You're as welcome a sight as unbranded steer.
Thank you, Mrs. McGee. Hello, McGee.
All set for the bank hold up the trivia? Got my holsters tied down and my trigger fingers itching.
You sound very authentic as a sheriff, McGee.
Yes, didn't I?
Yes, you did. Had any trouble so far today?
Nary a mite, Mr. Mayor. Folks been giving old two-gun McGee a wide berth. Needs one, too, the way he rolls around in his sleeve.
Incidentally, McGee, how did you get appointed sheriff for today, anyway?
How do you mean? What do you mean, how did I get appointed? I thought up this whole bank robbery stunt, didn't I? Who should ought to have been deserving it better than me?
Okay. I was merely asking, McGee.
Oh.
I guess you were the one who remembered that the James boys once held up this bank.
Not the James boys, Mr. Mayor. Bart Younger it was.
Yeah.
Bart Younger and his brother, Much.
Much was the older Younger.
How was that again, McGee?
I says Bart Younger was the younger Younger. Much was older.
Much older?
Yeah, Much.
You say that the older younger was much younger?
Yes.
Well, if the older younger was much younger, how could the younger younger have been much? I mean, older. I mean, if the older...
Well, you see, it's like this, Your Honor. Bart the younger younger, yeah, was quite respectable at first. He was even an elder in the church.
Yeah, yeah. Just the younger younger was an elder. The elder younger...
Oh, wait. Wait a minute, please. Now, let me get this straight.
Oh, of course. What don't you understand, Mr. Mayor?
Any of it. You say there were two younger, Bart and Much.
Exactly. Much was the older younger. The younger younger was the elder.
Well, if the younger younger was an elder younger, how did the older elder, Much younger, I mean, if Bart was not an elder, simply older than the younger younger, which is to say that the elder...
Ah, you're getting it now. Go on.
This doesn't make sense. Just because a man is an elder doesn't make an older younger. I mean, the younger brother...
Much?
Much was younger than older. Younger. Younger than the elder. The older was the... It was the man... It was... McGee. Will you excuse me? I wish to make a telephone call.
Oh, important, Mr. Mayor?
Yes. Yes. I want to call Abbott and Costello.
What?
I want to know who's on first. Good day.
How a man who gets as easily confused as he does ever got to be mayor?
Oh, well, the trivia. He's a simple soul. He just don't... Oh, my gosh, time for the holdup. Look, there's the newsreel cameras. Everything is set.
Shall I wait here with you?
Sure. We're just using blank cartridges now, Molly. One side there, please, folks. One side. I'm playing the sheriff.
Oh, there goes the robbers into the bank.
They'll be lucky to get out with the money they got on them. You can't fill your fountain pen in there without three co-signers.
Now, take it easy, folks. Take it easy. Give me elbow room.
Yes, sir.
Now, when I come out, I'm a-coming out a-shooting.
Get them, Paul. Here they come. Who'd you say them bandits was?
Mort Toops and Wally Wimple.
Well, don't look like either one of them was Mr. Wimple to me. Too big in the...
There we go. Drop them shooting irons, you varmints. It's Sheriff McGee talking to you. Drop them weapons, I tell you. I'm the law in these parts, and I ain't...
Ooh. Heavenly days. Ooh. That was a real bullet, McGee. They broke the bond town window.
Well, holy shit. Well, what in the Sam hell?
$80,000. Oh, no license plate. It's a clean getaway.
Hey, who thought up this dumb stunt anyway?
My name is McGee, the little twerp that played the sheriff.
Why are they all leave?
Hey, come on, Molly. Come on, Molly. Let's get out of here. I'm going to get home and farm a possum.
You mean a posse?
No, possum. I'm going to play dead for a few days.
Did you hear what happened after the robbery?
No, I've been afraid to even stick my head out the door far enough to get the evening paper. What happened?
Well, a sweetie face found Mr. Wimple and Mr. Toops tied up in Wimple's garage.
Yeah?
They told her what happened, and she chased the robbers on her motorcycle and caught them at the county line.
Ooh, did she bring them back?
Yeah, but not alive.
You mean sweetie face? Oh, but that's murder. She can't do that. Taking the law into her own hands like that? Why, that's terrible. That's...
McGee.
Huh?
McGee, don't get so excited. It's just a radio show.
Oh, is that what it was? Good night.
Good night, all.
Which Way'd They Go, sung by the King's Men, was written by Perry Butkin. This is Harlow Wilcox speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax Products for Home and Industry, inviting you all to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
One of the most family-friendly funniest of the golden age of radio comedy shows, Fibber, McGee, and Molly. Very beloved series. It was on for many, many years. Started on radio way back in 1935 and lasted all the way, Lisa, to 1959. That's a long time to be on the air. Hopefully we'll be on the air that long. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, I think so.
Actually, do you know that I have been on the air at some station or another since 1981. Did you know that?
You should be pretty good at it by now.
Curtis, that's before you were even born, buddy.
Way before I was born.
1981.
That was before everyone was born.
Was I even born in 1981? I'm trying to think now.
That's the million-dollar question that we still haven't figured out yet.
So how many years is that? 1981 to now.
Well, that'd be 30.
Gosh, it's 37 years?
36 years, was it? Yeah.
Wow, 36 years.
Yeah.
Holy, where did the time go?
Speaking of great comedies, we just got a text and somebody said, I laughed so loud I almost woke my kids. So it's so nice that people out there are appreciating as much as we are.
Yeah, and look what Lisa's wearing, a WGN shirt. What is that? What is this thing? It's a hoodie? What do you call it?
It's a hoodie.
It's very nice.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So Carl bought it for me.
Yeah, well,
I had it printed. It's got a little WGN Radio Theater logo on the front and the WGN logo on the back.
That's style right there, right?
Why haven't I gotten one yet?
I can get you one. When is your birthday?
You mean I can get you one?
When's your birthday?
September. Remember we had this?
You got a long perfect. Wait.
Remember the first time we worked together?
No, he doesn't remember.
You made a comment about, it was in January, like right after New Year's, and I said, you asked when my birthday was, and I said it's September, and you're like, "Oh, well, now you can do the math of when you were conceived."
I thought that would have stuck with you,
but I guess not.
He's got a short-term memory.
Yeah,
but you know what? If his birthday's September, that'll give me a long time to get out of the promise of buying him something.
That's true. You probably won't remember by then.
I could make a reminder. I'll ask Siri to remind me.
I got a few hoodies for Carl too, so we'll put on our cute little clothes and we'll take a picture.
We're gonna take some pictures. All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Can we have a big night tomorrow night, Lisa? You know why?
Yeah, I do, but you can tell us because I can see the excitement.
Big, big shoe. We have a big shoe. In fact, a 14-inch shoe. That's a big shoe.
Okay.
I wear a 10. What do you wear, Lisa?
What are we talking?
12, 14. It's a big shoe tomorrow. You know 14. Why? Because tomorrow night, we are going to give away another year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. And we have a very interesting group of people coming in to do that. We have Dave Weiske will be here. Dan Jaffe will not be here tomorrow. But we have Dave Weiske. We also have Lisa Mack. You haven't seen Lisa in a while. She's the vice president of marketing for Cat's Pride. She will be here. And also Lee Kraft, who's the Cat's Pride marketing coordinator. So we'll have three people in here tomorrow. And we'll have Dave, Lisa, and Lee. And we are going to give away another year's supply. We're going to talk about this new campaign where they are giving away a pound of Cat's Pride kitty litter every time a listener, one of our listeners, or anybody buys a jug of Cat's Pride kitty litter.
It's got to be the Fresh and Light Ultimate.
Fresh and Light. They're giving away a pound of kitty litter to a shelter that you name. So you go onto their website, catspride.com, and you can
sign up.
Yeah,
right?
You sign up the animal shelter that you want to nominate. And then all you have to do when you buy Cat's Pride kitty litter, they will automatically send a pound of kitty litter there, which here's what happens. Because they're doing that, the shelter doesn't have to spend money on kitty litter, so they can use that money to help the kitties and doggies.
So we all do want to buy Cat's Pride Ultimate Care in the Green Jug. They will be here tonight, actually, to talk about it. And, of course, we will be giving away our year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter to one lucky listener. If you haven't already sent in a picture of your cat, do it now. We need it every single month. So if you sent it a couple months ago, send it again. We're happy to get it. Make sure to send it in to catspridephoto@gmail.com and include your name, your Cat's Name Your City and State, send it in right away. And of course, you will automatically be entered into our contest, which will be around 11 o'clock tonight.
All right. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Welcome to Hour 2 of the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hi, Carl.
All right. This hour, it's The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. It's a hard-boiled detective. Speaking of hard-boiled, could you cook this egg for me?
I cannot.
Because I'm hungry and I want to have a hard-boiled egg while I'm listening to a hard-boiled detective.
And then you can walk down to the snack machine and purchase one with your Visa card.
That's right, I can. Actually, it's not a Visa card. It's an American Express.
Either way.
I only use American Express.
Okay. That's because you got the big bucks.
American. I've been an American Express customer since, I think, probably
the
1980.
Early 1900s.
Probably 1980.
But some places don't accept American Express.
This is
what
true.
Do you do? You don't have
this
a Visa?
This is true. No,
you
I don't
own a Visa?
I do not.
MasterCard?
No. No.
You're kidding me.
No, I am not kidding you.
How do you get by
American
in life?
Express only.
Discover?
No.
Breaks out the checkbook.
He just carries cash.
Cash.
He's
$4 or $5.
He's got a lot of cash.
With all those Twilight Radio CD sets that he's selling, I mean, he probably has some extra cash.
He's reeling it in.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, right. All right. In this hour, Adventures of Philip Marlowe, and it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
Dum, 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 dum. It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming film Soldado about the war against drugs along the border of the United States and Mexico. And the winner is going to get one of those Twilight Zone
No, MyPillow. I thought you said there was two MyPillows.
No, that's for tomorrow.
Oh,
right now,
yeah, tomorrow we're giving away another
Don't mess with
pillow.
Me. Sorry. We're going to give away a Twilight Zone. It's a 4-CD set, and you don't have to buy it. You get this one for free if you call in and you get to speak to our wonderful producer, Curtis. Right?
Yeah, the
Give
number
us a
to call.
312-981-7200. And we, yeah, okay.
Well, I got to.
You got to go ahead.
312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actress is Steve Carell's love interest in The 40-Year-Old Virgin.
It's our 20th date.
It's our 20th date.
I love her.
She's great. All right. 312-981-7200. Who is that actress? Win a Twilight Zone CD set. We'll be right back.
We are back. This is the WGN Radio Theater playing Celebrity Scoop. We're going to play that movie clip one more time.
It's our 20th date.
You know what happens then, right?
I don't.
20th
tell
date?
Me. Fill me in, Carl.
They hold hands.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah,
that's always
nice.
A nice thing. Yeah. Anything else?
No.
That's it. Nice. Well, Curtis took a call off the air. We found out that Joey knew the answer was Catherine Kinnear. And so congratulations.
Isn't it Keener?
Keener. Yeah, I think it is. Yeah. Catherine Keener.
Yeah,
Keener. It's Greg Kinnear and Catherine Keener.
Yeah,
that's what it
did
is.
Did you make a mistake?
No.
Curtis, I need you to tape. I need you to go back and tape this. Send it to me. I want to put it on a loop. That she made a mistake.
Stop
okay.
it.
So
don't listen to him.
So,
nobody listens to him. Don't
to
listen.
Her.
Let me finish. Joey knew the right answer. Curtis talked to Joey. He knew it was Catherine Keener. And so Joey won a Twilight Zone 4 CD set.
Very good.
So congratulations to him.
Very, very good. All right. Excellent. Thanks, Lisa.
Thanks, Carl.
All right. It's time for The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. This was a detective created by Raymond Chandler in his first novel, The Big Sleep. And then he had Philip Marlowe in his next six subsequent Chandler novels. And in the films, Dick Powell, Robert Montgomery, Humphrey Bogart, James Garner, and Robert Mitchum all played the character. And it came to radio in 1947, starring Van Heflin. But in 1948, they hired Gerald Moore to play the character, and he was really the best-known Philip Marlowe on radio. It actually, in 1949, had the largest audience in radio. Number one show. And a very, very popular radio series. Well, right now we have an episode called The Vital Statistic. It's from March 14th, 1950. Here's part one now of The Adventures of Philip Marlowe.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road. Those who travel it wind up in the gutter of the prison of the grave. This time a car hop knocked me down a flight of stairs. An honest woman was strangled by a green silk sash. And a simpering dandy was shot to death. All because of a run-of-the-mill accident 500 miles away. It happened like this.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Vital Statistic.
Hey, boy. Give me a paper, will you?
Paper, mister? Yes, sir. What do you like? Races, comics, or classified?
How about some news?
Star? Here you are. Thank you. Paper!
Get out of my way!
Hey, wait! Hey, take it easy.
Drive away from here. Fast.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. What is
this? You've got to help me. I'm being followed.
Oh, just a minute, sister. I think
the light's green. Drive, will you? Hurry, please.
Okay, okay. She was streamlined from close-cropped hair the color of a smoky sunset to low-heeled slippers brocaded in bronze. And in between, a dress that conformed as close and smooth as lacquer on a Chinese vase. I made four turns in four blocks, then pulled into the curb and stopped. She stabbed a look at me with a pair of sharp, jade-green eyes that said life had always been nothing but a calculated risk. Then she stepped out of the car and smiled.
You were a big help, brother. Thanks, and goodbye.
Not just like that, baby. Come here. I don't like being left out on a limb.
Now, look, you did me a favor, okay, but we drop it right here. It's trouble. You wouldn't like it.
On the contrary, it's business, like keeping my own nose clean. I'm a private detective, but I didn't issue any invitation for you to jump into my car.
A private detective?
Yeah, who's chasing you, baby? The law? You can tell me out here on the street or inside over a drink.
I'll take the drink. I need it.
Yeah.
Maybe I need you, too. This might be a break. I'm Mrs. Terry Labar, and you're,
Marlowe, Philip Marlowe. Who are you running from, Mrs. Labar?
A woman in slacks. I don't know who she is or why she's following me, but every time I look back, she's there. This is the second day. Booth?
Yeah, sure. Say, look, why haven't you talked it over with your local policeman?
Are you working for me, private detective?
It all depends.
All right. I'm a merchant, Chinese silks. Not a little shop for 6% profit, but wholesale quick with cash at 40%.
Uh-huh. So what's the point?
No police. All it takes is a rumor of police, and I'll have doors closed on me from Seattle to Mexico.
Good evening. May I get you something?
A martini, please.
Make it two, waiter.
Yes, sir. Right away.
This gets us back to the woman in slacks, huh?
Yeah. Here, Marlowe. 50 and 50. $100. I want you to locate that woman, find out who she is and why she's after me. Will you?
Not without a few more facts. For instance, could she have some connection with your business?
No. I have two men working with me. A strong one named Harlan Casey, who sees that my cash gets safely to where it's going. And a smart one named Joe Temple, who knows what to buy with it. She doesn't belong to either of them.
Oh, you sure?
Positive. Casey hates all women. Even me, I think. And Joe Temple. Well, Joe's a wonderful guy.
You hint like a woman falling in love with a fellow named Joe Temple. Care to talk about it further?
Why not? Temple and Casey have been in San Francisco all week on a deal. A big deal that'll make or break us. Every cent I have is tied up in it.
Oh. Well, what about you and Joe Temple?
Yeah. Well, perhaps this will explain. I planned to go away this weekend, but I changed my mind because I didn't want to miss his letters. I know it sounds funny, but it's true.
Those must be some letters.
They are. Like the one I got this morning. It's half business, all right. Complete account of how hard he and Casey worked for me yesterday in San Francisco. But the rest of it is to me, personally.
I don't want to sound old-fashioned, Mrs. Labar, but what about...
My husband?
Yeah, yeah.
That was a mistake I couldn't live with. One thing I can't stand, Marlowe, is being lied to. It leaves me vindictive. I'm suing for divorce right now. Vince Labar is a human leech, as cold and spineless and parasitic as the real thing.
Okay, but why would your hating your husband put a woman in slacks on your trail?
I don't know.
All right, Terry, I'll worry about that, too. Any idea where I can start?
Just one. I pulled a switch on her yesterday, Marlo, for about an hour. I trailed her to the corner of Wilshire and La Cienega, then lost her in traffic. There are several dancing schools around there. Is that worth anything?
Maybe. What kind of car was she driving?
We were both walking. She's tall and brunette, and I've seen toads with nicer eyes.
Not enough. Can't guarantee anything.
I'll keep my fingers crossed, Marlo. Here, take the $100.
Oh.
Do what you can and report to me at my place, 204 Beechwood Circle. Okay?
Pardon, sir. Your drinks. Two martinis?
Oh, thanks. Here you are.
Oh, thank you, sir.
To your success, Private Detective.
To your health, Silk Merchant. Drink hearty. Slugging it down was no way to treat a good dry martini, but I figured it was time I was on my way. I drove out to Wilshire and La Cienega and slowed down enough to look at all four corners. There was a drugstore with a special on garbage cans, a drive-in called Scotty's, a branch of the Bank of Los Angeles, and a flying red horse over a mobile gas station. I drove on again when I spotted a pair of black slacks going into a dancing studio a half block down. It looked like a lead. But after 2 hours of staring at knobby knees and shorts and bulging hips and bloomers, all knocking themselves out for a mythical Klieg-lighted future, I was finally convinced that it was a dead end. Now I got back into my car and headed up into the hills for Beechwood Circle in the slim hope that Terry could give me something more to go on. Her house at 204 was low and dainty and half hidden behind the tough, slender grace of a bamboo grove. The walk was guarded by a white marble lion of Korea, and the front door, when I finally found it, turned out to be a sliding panel in a wall of oriental lattice work. As the door slid open, I was looking down the barrel of a snub-nosed pistol held very steady in the hands of a hard-eyed brunette in a pair of black slacks.
You've been looking high and low for me, haven't you, Peeper? Ever since you left that dame.
I might have been.
You're not the brightest character in the world, in spite of what you and your friends think. I spotted your car when she got in. It wasn't too tough to tag.
Where's Terry?
Sleeping off a hangover from better days.
Skip the chatter. Where is she?
Come on in and look. And that's no suggestion, sailor. It's an order. Move. Over there to the top of the stairs.
Sure, sure.
That's a good smart boy. You're late, you know. I got what I came for, and now I'm in a hurry. Turn around.
Look, sister.
Shut up! A happy landing!
Oh, there were 10 stairs down to the basement. And with a shove reinforced by the 45, I hit all but the first three. By the time I worked all the kinks out and was back upstairs again, she was gone. I started through the house, then slowly from one room to another, turning on lights as I went, looking for what I knew was going to be a very sick client. When I got as far as the study where somebody had gone through the desk drawers with what must have been a snowplow, and I still hadn't found Terry, I got that numb feeling in my stomach. I started out a side door that opened into the patio. But then I heard a whistle from the front walk. I cut back through the house instead and waited near the door.
Terry! Hey, Terry, can I come in? It's little Joe, the Frisco kid. What happened to your weekend trip, honey?
Who are you? What do you want?
Hiya, Temple.
How do you know me?
Mrs. LaBar hired me today just after she canceled the weekend. She gave me a rundown.
She hired you? What do you mean?
I'm a private detective named Marlowe.
Why would she hire you?
Because she was being followed by a brunette in slacks. She didn't like it, and that's all the information you're going to get, so relax.
You say Terry isn't here? Isn't home?
Not so far, no. Come on back here to the study, Temple. I want you to look at something. Somebody's gone through the desk in an awful hurry.
Yeah. Yeah, I see what you mean.
Maybe you know something about what's missing, huh? You and Mrs. LaBar were fairly close, from what I'm told.
The letters. The letters are gone. Terry kept my letters in this bottom drawer.
Ah. By the way, Temple, where's your sidekick, Harlan Casey?
Oh, I don't know. We both left San Francisco yesterday. He hates to fly, so I assume he took a train. He ought to be here in L.A. now. Well, you don't think Casey's mixed up in this, do you?
I don't know. It could be.
Vince LaBar. That's who it was that got those letters. It was Vince LaBar. They were really love letters. The business part was nothing. And LaBar is the dog-in-the-manger kind of guy who wants everyone to be unhappy if he
is. That fits, Temple. With a smart lawyer, your letters to Terry becomes grade-A material for a countersuit for divorce. Sure, he could make it stick and also get a fat settlement under community property laws. Now listen, here's what you've
Marlo.
Got.
Marlo, it's Terry. Terry!
Temple,
Terry!
Wait!
Terry!
Look at her, Marlo. Look at her. She's dead.
Lieutenant Matthews, homicide detail.
Marlo Matthews, there's a dead one out here. A woman, you got a pencil?
Always. Go ahead, Marlo.
I'm at 204 Beechwood Circle. The woman was a client.
Circle. Yeah, go on.
She was strangled with a green silk sash from my lounging pajamas, Matthews, sometime within the last, I'd say, hour.
Yeah.
Her name was Terry LaBarre.
Hey, wait, Wolf. Terry LaBarre. Wait a minute, Marlo. Listen, we got a teletype here from a sheriff in Empire, Oregon, come in 5 minutes ago.
So?
Oh, wait a minute. Yeah. Says some guy named Jess Freeman from L.A. was killed there this morning in a traffic accident. Was loaded with big dough, but doesn't look the type. The only other identification on him was a business card from one Terry LaBarre. Yeah. You got a helpful answer for that?
Wait a minute. Temple, do you know anything about a man named Jess Freeman? He was killed in Oregon today in a traffic accident and had one of Terry's cards on him.
Freeman?
Yeah.
No, I don't remember him.
No dice, Matthews.
Who are you talking to?
Joe Temple, one of Terry LaBarre's associates. He's here. Never heard of Jess Freeman?
Yeah. Okay, Marlo.
Uh-huh.
Well, they sent his prints to Washington. A tattoo says he was in the Navy once. They'll pin him down. Now, about out there, any idea who killed him?
Yeah, maybe a brunette in slacks. I think I know where to find her.
Well, it's dandy. Sit on it till we get there, Marlo. I'll be right out.
Wait a minute, Lieutenant.
What?
Look, right now it's only a hunch, but if I move fast and quiet, I might be able to develop it into something worthwhile, okay?
Okay, but keep in touch, Phil.
Yeah.
I still can't believe it about Terry, Marlo.
Now, look, why don't you just go home and take it easy? I'll tell Lieutenant Matthews where he can find you, huh?
Thanks. 1310 Marlboro Drive.
Right. Now tell me, you know where Vince LaBarre lives?
Yeah. The Laverne Apartments on Rossmore.
Uh-huh.
He's got a suite on the top floor, 7A.
7A.
And if it's any help, he drives a new green Nash sedan. But I thought you said that it was that brunette who...
I did. And if Vince LaBarre can't lead me to the lady in long pants, I'll eat my shirt. What's more, Matthews will see to it personally.
Yes, what do you want?
Some quiet conversation with Vince LaBarre. I'm Philip Marlowe, private detective.
How exciting. Had I known you were coming, I'd have baked a cake.
Oh, you're breaking me up. I was hired by your wife tonight.
Get out
your
of
wife
here.
Is dead, LaBarre. She was murdered.
Dead? Terry murdered?
Yeah. Now, if you don't mind, I'll come in, huh? She was killed because of a packet of letters, LaBarre.
Oh, no.
The kind that are a cinch to cause a big stir in anybody's divorce court. Stir up big enough to swing a countersuit in your favor.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Letters. Joe Temple's letters to Terry, the ones you arranged to have stolen tonight.
Oh, you must be crazy.
Her death wasn't part of the plan, LaBarre. That was one of those bum deals. A robbery that got out of hand, wound up as a murder.
Oh, no, wait.
Now, where is she, LaBarre? Who's the brunette in slacks, and where do I find her?
You get out of here, or I'll have the police help you.
Oh, shut up. Not only steal letters, but ashtrays, too, huh? Like this coy little number here, a doghouse. Scotty's Drive-In, Wilshire and La Cienega. Okay, LaBarre, that's
stand
all.
Still.
Oh, now a gun, huh? They say you're yellow, LaBarre, but you're not. You're just stupid.
The terrace outside those doors, Marlo. Those with the iron grill. Go on out there. Go on. I don't think Terry's dead, and I don't think she hired you. I think you're working for that lousy louse, Joe Temple, and if so, he'll need a battalion of private detectives before I'm through.
You're through right now, LaBarre. You're too dumb to see it.
Go on. Clear over to the rail. Keep your back to me. It's 7 floors down, Marlo, to a concrete driveway. Just in case you get jumpy.
In just a moment, the second act of Philip Marlowe.
All right, let's take a quick break from Philip Marlowe. We'll be right back. When we come back from the news, it's the conclusion to Philip Marlowe. Then we'll tune into Fort Laramie with Raymond Burr. What do you think of that, Roger? Raymond Burr is coming up in a little while. Perry Mason.
I think that needs to be taken up with the judge and a jury.
Yes, Raymond Burr. He was also Ironside.
That's right. And...
Yeah.
He starred in Godzilla.
Oh, that's right. He did. He did.
If you check
in
our
the Americanized version of it.
Yeah. If you check our Facebook page, you can see a nice little fun fact about him for this week's show.
Yeah. We have Raymond fun facts. Fun
what? Fact. You don't look at our Facebook page, Roger?
I do.
I count on you.
I do.
For a lot.
I only count once.
You know what I count on Roger for?
Uh-oh.
Besides a lot of stuff,
yeah,
the news.
That's good.
And it's 12:33. That means you're up, buddy.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Roger Badish. And we've had quite a few people text us saying how much they like the surprise boxes. When you go to our website, WGNRadioTheater.com, there will be a pop-up that talks about three different surprise boxes that you can order. You can get a surprise box of classic radio shows on CD. You can get a surprise box of classic movies and classic television shows on DVD and the Twilight Zone radio dramas on CDs. You get $150 worth of product for only $39.99. In each one of those surprise boxes, just go to WGN Radio Theater and check it out. Learn all about it. A lot of people, in fact, I got a nice email earlier saying, I got my box of stuff. Oh, my gosh, there's so much great things in there. She bought the classic TV stuff.
There's a lot of listening or viewing hours in that box to enjoy.
Tons and tons. We pack it with a lot of stuff for you.
I hear there's a fourth box that you've been hiding.
What is it?
Yeah, well, it's a very large box because there's so much in it.
Yeah.
Actually, it's when they open it, you pop out and say surprise.
Ah. It's like the Jack in the Box.
I get to ship Carl off somewhere.
It's a Carl in the box.
Where are we going to ship him?
Whoever orders him.
Now, that sounds fun.
Well, send me to
Hawaii?
Florida or
Acapulco,
Arizona.
Bali.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we'll surprise you. Yeah, I'll show up at your door and surprise you, all right?
I get to tape the box closed, Roger.
And
Don't forget the holes to breathe.
Yeah.
I'll try.
One other reminder, when you are at our website, just scroll down a little bit and you will see our banner to get our free app. We have an app, Roger,
this happen?
Yes, we just launched it last week. It's
an app.
And in the app, are you ready for this?
Yes,
it's free. The app is free.
Mm-hmm.
You get 10 free classic radio shows.
No way. Yeah. Come on, you're crazy.
On the app.
Oh, that's
what are you smoking down there? You're crazy.
I'm smoking life.
There you go, buddy.
So just go to our website, WGN Radio Theater. Scroll down a little. You'll see a banner. And on that banner, you can click on the Google Store or you can click on the Apple Store. It'll take you right to the app. Download it and enjoy it. There's 10 free classic radio shows in there. I know you're going to love it. All right. Time now for the conclusion to the adventures of Philip Marlowe.
Now, with our star, Gerald Moore, we return to the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's story, The Vital Statistic.
The moment Vince LaBar and the Courage caliber 32 he held in his right hand made it out of the apartment and on the run for the elevator, I kicked through the plate glass door. And I spent the next 2 minutes alternately swearing, straining, and nicking myself while I played contortionist. In and out of the fancy snake grill work on my wrought iron cage until finally I reached the inside handle. And I was free out and over to the telephone in a big hurry. Because for my money, the icing on LaBar's voice left Joe Temple someplace on the short side. What the life insurance people call good risk.
Hello?
Marlowe, Temple, listen hard. Your life's in danger.
What?
LaBar, you had him tagged from the first. He's after those letters, all right.
But what about the girl in slacks?
Well, I think she might have a connection with a drive-in on Wilshire and La Cienega, a place called Scotty's Inn. I'm going to check it. Now, tell me, any word from Terry's muscle man yet?
Harlan Casey?
Yeah.
No, nothing, Marlowe. But look, can't I meet you and talk to you?
No, no. Vince LaBar had a gun and a short temper when he left here. Don't make us work any easier. Just stay away from open windows, Temple. I'll call you. Scotty's Inn was eating on the run in the finest California tradition. A mammoth circle of steel under glass painted a dazzling yellow and blue, surrounded by a half a dozen cars containing teenaged couples with smudged lipstick and the giggles. The second after I pulled in and parked, something in slacks with false eyelashes, a waist you could span with a handcuff, and a fixed frontline chorus girl's smile flipped the card marked Ginger against my windshield. handed me a menu that still had the froth from an earlier customer's milkshake in one corner.
What'll it be, mister?
Just coffee, Ginger.
Cream?
Uh-uh, information.
Oh, it's you again.
Huh?
Look, baby, what I told you on the phone 10 minutes ago still goes, huh?
About what?
About Rose Facetta, the girl you described. Long black hair, a nice shape, you're infatuated, but you don't know the name and address. So I was nice. I gave the name, told you to look the address up in the phone book, period. Don't be so lazy, baby.
Wait a minute, Ginger. I didn't call you before, but that dime cup of coffee will bring you a $10 tip if you tell me who did.
Hey, you want the guy who called. I don't know any names, but you're not him.
Mm.
He didn't talk up like you do. But what's all the fuss, baby? Rose Facetta's got a guy. She's spoken for. Besides, a handsome fellow
sweetheart,
like you should...
Sweetheart, this is business, strictly, believe me.
Oh.
What's the address? Come on.
2428 Havenhurst Drive, bottom floor.
Thanks. Here. Here's the 10 I promised you.
No, never mind.
Hmm?
The name was free to him, so why should I charge you? Besides...
Beside what?
I like the way you said sweetheart. Come on back sometime, will you, baby, when you want more than coffee?
Okay. When I want more than coffee and less than murder, I will. Stay out of it, Ginger. It was definite double talk, but the effect was what I wanted. Ginger, with mouth wide open and staring after me like my ears were on backwards. That way, she might be scared out of making a simple curiosity spike telephone call to the popular Rose Facetta, which would trumpet my arrival loud, clear, and prematurely. 10 minutes later, I was parked away from number 2824, Havenhurst. As I got out of my car and started toward the place, I found Vince Labar's green sedan on the opposite side of the street and carefully tucked into the shadows of a pair of long-haired pepper trees. It was a good time for me to be careful. So when I knocked on the front door, which showed yellow light at the threshold and was the starting point for something not too close to music, I did it with the butt end of my .38.
Yeah, who is it?
Ziggy, friend of Ginger's. She asked me to deliver you a message, Rose.
Oh, all right. What's the message, friend? Why, you loud...
Don't try it, sunshine. There's no law against shooting ladies or knocking downstairs. Now back off. Come on, move, but not too far. The moment I want you in between me and Vince Labar.
Who?
Look, Angel, it's all real plain. Those suitcases behind you there are packed. His car's outside. He's after the letters. Oh, no.
There goes Vince now, Buster. Well, peeper, your opener stinks.
Get inside fast.
Sure, sure. Any place in particular, sailor?
That chair near the desk. Keep your hands in your lap.
Okay. If it'll please you, Mr. Detective, I'll be very glad to. After all, you're my guest, and I should be nice to you.
Now we talk like a little lady, huh, Rose? Vince Labar picked up the letters from you as scheduled, and you're getting ready to run because you killed Terry, and you'd rather not be around for the question and answer period, right?
I didn't kill her. I just knocked her down.
No. You didn't kill her. You just slowed down her breathing somewhat with a pajama sash.
You're wrong, copper.
Skip it. Doesn't add any other way. Go on, answer it.
Who is it?
Mr. Shirley. What's going on in there, Mr. Fetter?
Landlord?
No, the jerk who lives in the top half of this place, along with a few thousand
Mr.
French
poodles. Mr. Fetter, if you don't open this door, I'm going to call the police. I distinctly heard a noise, and I...
Come on in, Mr. Shirley.
Well, what's going on in here? Who are you?
Never mind that now. Get on the phone and call the police.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes, certainly. Operator, I want the police. 2824 Havenhurst.
Look, hero.
Yes.
You're a little mixed up about some things.
Yeah, and you're just a kid to straighten me out. Those letters you got at Terry's place were written by Joe Temple.
All right.
Was your boyfriend Vince heading for Temple when he left here?
I can't.
Try hard, sister.
All right. Maybe he was. Now, leave me alone.
Not quite. Hey, you, Mr. Shirley.
Oh, yes?
In that desk next to you, there's a gun. Keep it on until the law arrives. Oh. Ladies wanted for murder.
Well, yes, but what if she should...
Yeah, then shoot, Shirley, fast. Because if you don't, she'll kill you. Tell the cops I'll fill in the blanks later.
Oh, now, wait. Why must you leave? Why don't we both watch?
Because a guy named Joe Temple needs my help a lot more than you do. The home address Temple had given me turned out to be lights in a quiet house on a quiet street named Marlborough. I was there out of my car and running for the front door when they came. I chucked my gun out of the holster, got close into the building, and moved up until I was on a line with a pair of half-open patio doors. And I saw something I hadn't expected. On the floor that was littered with a broken lamp, pieces of vase, and overturned furniture was Vince Labar. Doubled up. Dead. And standing over him, his face the color of soft cement, a .32 dangling in his limp right hand, was Joe Temple. When he saw me, he tried to talk, but the words jammed in his throat.
Marlo.
When I stepped into the room, he began to tremble.
Marlo, I shot him. I couldn't help it. He was gonna...
Sit down, Temple. Get a hold of yourself. You got any brandy around?
Over on that table near the phone.
No.
He was out of his mind, Marlo. An absolute maniac. He said he was gonna kill me.
So you lunged for him, there was a fight, and you came up with a gun, huh?
Yeah. And when he started for me again, I pulled the trigger. And then I did it again. And a third time.
Yeah. Drink this.
He brought the letters back, Marlo. They're inside on the floor where he threw them. He said they didn't mean anything anymore. That he and that girl in the slacks had taken care of Terry.
Take it easy, Temple, easy.
He seemed to go crazy. He said I was a wife stealer, the cause of his trouble, and that I deserved death. Well, that's when I jumped at him. It was terrible, Marlo.
Yeah. Well, between the two of us, we've just about got all the answers, which is usually a good time to call the police, huh?
What do you mean, just about got all the answers, Marlo? What else is there?
Jess Freeman, the guy Lieutenant Matthews told us about when we were over at Terry's place, remember?
Oh, yes, that traffic crash in Empire, Oregon. But why should that figure in this, Marlo?
It shouldn't, but I think it does.
Homicide, Detective Lieutenant Matthews speaking.
Marlo Matthews, another dead one on the Terry LaBar case.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Vince LaBar, her husband, he was shot.
Who did it, Marlo, do you know?
Yeah, a guy named Joe Temple. It was self-defense. We're coming in, Matthews. I'll take that gun, Temple. You get the letters. Let's go. When we got into my car and started downtown, Temple was more relaxed. And he talked easily until we passed Vince LaBar's sparkling green sedan parked a block away. Once again, close into the shadows, and once again, empty. Real empty. The sight of it closed him up tight for the rest of the trip. When we walked into police headquarters and through the quarter of a mile of glossy corridor leading to the door marked homicide, he didn't open up any. But it didn't matter, really, because it's police rule never to talk to two men about the same thing at the same time. And I was first. Matthew said hello without shaking hands, waved me into an uncomfortable seat, and then lit his pipe while I brought him up to date. And it was his turn.
So Rose Facetta killed Terry LaBar so that she could get the letters Joe Temple had written, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Did this so that her boyfriend, Vince LaBar, could raise a lot of fuss in divorce court with the letters, file a counter-suit, that kind of stuff?
That's the whole deal.
Yeah, with Temple making it a doubleheader by shooting Vince when Vince came to kill him.
That's it, Matthews. Yeah. If you believe Temple.
Huh?
And if Temple hadn't slipped.
All right, now what are you getting at, Phil?
That when I was on the phone with you earlier tonight, you asked me if Temple or I knew anything about a Jess Freeman who was killed in a traffic accident in Empire, Oregon?
Right, but you didn't.
No. Nor did I mention the town of Empire to Temple. Ooh. Yet a half hour ago, just before I called you, Temple came up with that name.
Oh, then Marlo, you... Oh. Hold my calls, Mooney. Marlo, you mean...
That Joe Temple killed Terry LaBar. Rose just knocked her out and got the letters. Temple strangled her while she was still unconscious.
Yeah, but why?
Because a guy identified as Jess Freeman got himself killed in a traffic accident.
So?
A guy who I think was actually Holland Casey, Terry's two-fisted assistant, who together with Joe Temple was crossing the boss lady.
Yeah, but Marlo...
And that left Temple in a very hot spot. To save himself, he had a kill.
Can you prove all this, Marlo?
No. Not a word of it. It's conjecture. But conjecture that fits, Matthews.
Yeah.
When Temple found Terry unconscious in the garden, that was his chance. He took it.
Now, look, Phil, you're guessing at 90%.
Sure, I'm guessing. But not in the dark. I know how these guys think and act. I've done too many cases not to know. Now, listen for a minute, will you, Matthews?
Phil, I gotta
will you
have
listen?
Facts. All right, okay.
Now, look. Temple had to get those letters back, right?
Yeah.
And the last one in particular, because in the last one, this is the way it's got to figure. He had lied to Terry about being in San Francisco with Casey yesterday, when actually Casey was in Empire, Oregon.
Yeah, when Casey was killed up there, the fact was bound to come out. Yeah, it's a good reason.
Matthews, will you let me finish, please?
All right, finish.
Temple knew Terry would find out. He knew that she couldn't stand a liar and a partner who'd double-cross her. Temple knew that she'd get him and ruin him if it took her the rest of her life.
So he came back to get the letter before she could read it, but she hadn't left town as planned, huh?
Ironically enough, because she didn't want to miss one of his letters.
Yeah, but look, I'm a policeman, Phil. I gotta have facts.
All right. You're the policeman. You got labs and technicians. You'll get the facts. And I'll bet you it figures just like I say.
Yeah, okay, Phil. Okay.
And another thing, Matthews.
What?
When you talk to Temple, who's holding the packet of letters now like a real good boy.
Yeah.
You'll find the last one missing. It'll be in his pocket. I'll bet you on that. Well, that ought to do it, Lieutenant.
Yeah, with one exception, Phil.
Huh?
How did Temple maneuver all this? Getting the letters from Rose Fassett and then setting up that self-defense deal.
I don't know. But my guess is that Vince got the letters from Rose just before I arrived at her place. But when he got into his car...
Oh, yeah. Temple was waiting, slugged him, drove back to his own house, dropped the body in the living room, shot him when he heard you coming.
Something like that, Matthews. See if he can't get it out that way.
Yeah, well,
know?
Don't worry, Phil. If it's true, we'll get it out.
It'll be true.
Now would you ask Mr. Temple to come in, please, Mr. Mullow?
I'll be glad to, Lieutenant. Say, Temple, Lieutenant would like to see you.
All right, Marlow. I think I can speak coherently now.
Good. They like to get the facts straight in there. Go ahead.
Yes, of course. Good night, Marlow, and thanks for your help.
Oh, good evening, Mr. Temple. Sit down and start talking.
When I got into my car, the new day was starting to push the black out of the sky. And the early morning air smelled fresh and cool and clean. Yeah, the whole night had been confused and complicated. But I knew that by the time Matthews had finished with Temple, there'd be no questions left unanswered. That would be great, wouldn't it? If everything could be that way. No questions left unanswered.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, star Gerald Moore, are produced and directed by Norman MacDonald and are written for radio by Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt. Gerald Moore may currently be seen starring in Republic's The Blonde Bandit. Featured in the cast were Charlotte Lawrence, Elliot Reed, Doris Singleton, Georgia Ellis, Bill Lally, and Hugh Thomas. Detective Lieutenant Matthews is played by Larry Dubkin. The special music is composed and conducted by Richard Arant. Be sure and be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
This time a bride-to-be, a corpse in a plush bungalow, and a southern drawl behind a gun all had one thing in common. They moved through the same deep shadow.
Remember, you'll find George Burns and Gracie Allen and their good friend Bill Goodwin here on most of these same CBS stations every Wednesday night in the half hour following the Bing Crosby Show. This is Roy Rowan speaking. Now, stay tuned for Pursuit, which follows immediately. This is CBS, where Burns and Allen are heard every Wednesday night, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That is The Adventures of Philip Marlowe from March 14th, 1950, The Vital Statistic, starring Gerald Moore. And I have a question. Why did all of these detectives, not a one of them, had a voice that wasn't deep? All of the detectives had the deep voice like that. Well, you know, Roger, not one detective had like a, hi, how you doing? I'm Detective Johnny Dollar. Not one of them, Roger.
Yeah, go, say this line in that voice, please.
Yeah, what line?
Drop the gun.
Drop the gun.
Yeah, no,
exactly.
I ain't going to do it. No, yeah. No.
Not one?
No.
Every single detective.
I think that's why.
Why? Because...
I think that's why.
Yeah, but in real
life...
It had
to sound tough.
In real life, there are detectives that have, you know...
Different voices. They don't
not
talk
deep,
tough
super
like that.
Voice, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, we'll have to pick this up in a
minute.
Most
of them know where you live, too.
We have to go to a break, but I think we should talk about this. We have to do a study on this. First, this commercial break. Come back from the news. It is Fort Laramie, starring Raymond Burr, a good cavalry kind of Western adventure for you. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It is 1:01 in the morning. Time for the news. Here's Roger Badish.
back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
We have Roger Badish with a deep voice. We have Bill Curtis with a deep voice. We have David Jennings with a deep voice. And then
then there's me. I've got a deep voice.
Lisa has a very deep voice.
Lisa,
you know, Roger, Lisa does, she can actually sound like a guy. Do it. Come on, Lisa.
I can't do it when you say that, because if I smile, I can't
she
do it.
Does,
well, don't smile. Then.
She does this voice.
Turn away from turn the microphone the other way. Look away from him.
No, I can't do it. I can do it for you later,
promise
but I can't
you,
do it.
It sounds
I can
like a
sound
man.
Like a man.
Here's a question, though, that I have for you, Carl, and it's a serious one about old-time radio.
Yes.
I do not remember any detective series starring a woman.
Oh, yeah, there was plenty.
Okay, tell me.
Well, Candy Matson comes to mind. Natalie Masters starred as Candy Matson. You can 28120 or something. I can't remember. Candy Matson. That was one of them. Then there was Miss Sherlock.
Oh.
I don't know if it was a sister or a girlfriend or whatever, or maybe, you know, married to Sherlock Holmes. I don't know. It was Miss Sherlock. Okay. And then there was... Philco Mysteries, Phil, like Phyllis, Co. Mysteries.
As in Philco Radio?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was sponsored by Philco Radio, of course. Right. And then there was another one. She wasn't really a detective. She was more of a district attorney.
Oh, okay.
And Mercedes McCambridge actually played the part.
Didn't she do the voice in The Exorcist?
Yeah, she was the voice of the demon in The Exorcist. And I can't remember the name of that
show.
Now,
that's a...
But there
deep
weren't.
Voice.
But there were not a lot.
Yeah.
You know what I think would be a fun segment on the show, and this would be. I think you would enjoy this too, Roger. Why don't you once an hour ask me, completely without my knowledge, a classic radio trivia question?
Well, I could do that.
Yeah, because
sure.
Roger knows his classic radio. Let's see if you can stump me.
Let's put it this way. I have forgotten more than I remember. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
When I was teaching, I could remember everything. But since I've been out of the classroom for 4 years now.
Since you've been drinking Roma wines.
Hello. Like
Roger,
Lisa.
Back in the day we did a different radio show here in Chicago, and we used to have a segment called Stump the Host.
Okay.
And so that was exactly that. So I would come in with a whole series of questions and stump the host. Now, if he knew the answer, then all is well with the world. And if he didn't know the answer, then it was a lousy question. See, so just
wait a minute, you know. So
if he doesn't know the answer, he's going to say, "Roger, that's not a fair question."
Or
you know, why would that question doesn't even make sense?
All right, here's what we'll do. You'll have let's do one in the next half of the after the news. You come back from the news at the bottom of the hour.
Mm-hmm.
Find a trivia question and ask me, and then we'll see. Let's try it.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
But right now we have to play our celebrity scoop contest. This hour it is Fort Laramie with Raymond Burr, and it's brought to you by Cat's Pride.
Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming film The Predator, a remake of the 1987 sci-fi film Predator.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, they're making a remake of that? I love that movie. Arnold
Schwarzenegger. And I love this actor as well.
Yeah, he's great. All right, you will win a Twilight Zone CD set.
Mm-hmm.
The number to call, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. He played Jeffrey Darden in The People vs. O.J. Simpson.
You've presented a defense that is based completely on lies and deceptions.
Yeah, all right.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, who is that great actor? 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after these words.
We are back. This is the WGN Radio Theater playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
You've presented a defense that is based completely on lies and deceptions.
All right.
All right.
Lisa?
We've got Daniel on the line. Do we have him?
I don't know if we do or not. Let's see here. There we go. Hi, Daniel.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Great. Who's that actor?
I believe it was Sterling K. Brown.
You are right, Sterling K. Brown. Didn't he just win?
Yeah, won a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, he did for This Is Us. So congratulations, Daniel. You are a winner, and you've won the Twilight Zone 4 CD set. It's amazing. We're going to send it right out to you. Congratulations. Hope you love it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Great to hear from you.
All right, he knew the answer, Lisa. Of course, I think I would have known that one.
But yeah, he's a pretty hot actor right now.
You know what? He was so great as Darden in The People versus O.J. Simpson. Just awesome. I mean, who is this guy? He's fantastic.
My very favorite show right now is This Is Us, and I can't get enough of it, so I'm crazy about him.
All right, well, you know what?
What? Let's do
it's
a little.
It's time for Western.
Fort Laramie.
Western adventure, adult Western, came to radio in 1956. Raymond Burr starred as Lee Quince, captain of the U.S. Cavalry. This was a show produced by Gunsmoke's Norman McDonald, and it depicted the life at Fort Laramie in the mid 1800s. And the fort was located across the North Platte River from the town of Laramie at the mouth of the Laramie River. And it had a bunch of great supporting actors in it, including Vic Perrin, Harry Bartell, Howard McNear, Sam Edwards, John Daner. Terrific series. Raymond Burr was Captain Lee Quince. And our fun fact this week is about Raymond Burr. So you can check it out on our website. But right now it's
Facebook
time.
Page.
Yeah. But right now it is time for Fort Laramie. This is called The Lost Child. Here's Raymond Burr in part one of Fort Laramie.
At the gallop!
Fort Laramie, starring Raymond Burr as Captain Lee Quince. Specially transcribed tales of the dark and tragic ground of the wild frontier, the saga of fighting men who rode the rim of empire, and the dramatic story of Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry.
Patrol! Halt! Sergeant Gord.
Yes, sir.
Dismiss the patrol. I've got a report to Major Daggett.
Yes, sir.
And see that their horses are babied right this time.
Yes, sir. Patrol! Prepare to dismount. Dismount.
Captain Quince reporting, sir. Oh, I'm sorry, sir. I thought you'd be alone.
That's all right, Captain. Oh, this is Major Barlow.
Major?
My pleasure, Captain.
Well, how did your patrol fare?
Routine, sir. No sign of trouble.
Good. Oh, sit down, Quince.
Thank you, sir.
Major Barlow is here on orders from General Staff in Washington. He's surveying all the posts in our department.
I have only a few days here, and then I'm going on Fort Dodge.
General Custer's command?
Yes. I'm looking forward to that. Read hundreds of reports, and certainly that 7th Cavalry is doing the best job with the hostiles that can be done.
You haven't surveyed them yet?
Well, not personally, no. The record reads victory after victory. I wish we could say the same about the 2nd.
Well, the circumstances are a little different, Major. They're waging open warfare from Fort Dodge. Here, we try to keep hostilities at a minimum, maintain peace. Captain, how much firefight have we seen in the last month?
Oh, 3 or 4 skirmishes is all, sir. Mostly with dog soldiers driven from the Fort Dodge section.
Dog soldiers?
There are 2 kinds of Cheyenne. That's the tribe we've been most interested in around here lately. Dog soldiers are the warriors. They wear 3 feathers.
Oh.
The ones that don't wear the feathers are the reservation peaceful kind. We don't bother either unless they make us.
Yeah. Well, Major, it's the belief of many members of the staff, including myself, that a soft policy such as yours is bound to lead to an uprising.
I hope you're wrong, sir.
Well, the hostiles see it as a sign of weakness. The only way to enforce peace with these savages is to maintain constant pressure, continual display of strength.
Will we get a directive to that effect, Major? Or is that a private opinion?
It's my opinion at the moment. I can assure you I'll do everything I can to see a directive based on it. Now, Captain, if you'll show me to your troop area.
Yes, sir. Major Barlow will be attached to your troop during his stay. You'll place yourself at his disposal, do everything possible to assist him in making his survey.
It's an honor, sir.
First thing I want to do, Captain, is make a complete tour of the reservation camps. I want a first-hand look at the natives. Their condition, their attitudes, extent of their weapons, so on.
Camps are pretty well scattered, Major. It'll take some time to cover all of them.
These reservation people should be centralized so they can be watched.
They've lived in small village bands for hundreds of generations. They kind of need stretching
room. They're prisoners of war, Captain. Prisoners of war live under imposed conditions, not their own.
Yes, sir.
Captain Quince.
Yes, Sergeant. At ease. What is it?
There's a man waiting for you in the orderly room, sir. Ben Coons.
What does he want?
He says his stepson was stole by the Cheyenne.
What's that?
We'll go in and find out. Thank you, Sergeant. I've just heard about your son, Coons. How'd it happen?
How do I know? My place is only 5 miles outside of town, and he was gone when I got home last night. Look at this.
Cheyenne scalping knife.
Was stuck in my door. I've had a Cheyenne Lodge oath hanging over my head for a year. That filthy devil finally found a way to get to me.
You mean someone in particular?
One of the worst of the breed. Wasaya.
I've heard of him. Quite a warrior.
You say he's had a personal hatred for you, Mr. Coons? Ever since last summer. I was scouting for the 7th. Run across his camp on that big north swing of the Solomon. You know, Captain, just before it flows into Grand Valley.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I led the troopers into it, and during the fracas, Wasaya's brother was killed. That's when he took the oath to put me under, or do worse. Now he's done it, taken Billy.
I'm sorry about your son, Coons, but the way I heard the story of that attack, Wasaya's wife and 8-year-old son were killed, too, by one of our scouts.
I didn't have nothing to do with it. I did what I was paid to. Captain, the man's child's been kidnapped. I see no reason to discuss anything else. The army's supposed to protect the civilians.
What makes you so sure it was Wasaya?
Well, he brought his band into the Laramie foothills 2 days ago, put that and the knife and his oath together, and there's no place else to look.
Where'd you hear he was in this part of the country?
Your breed scout, Quanto, got wind of it. I should think you would have learned about it in your patrol, Captain.
No, we were working in the other direction, Major.
No. I heard this morning. Right away, I got the feeling about what happened, and I started looking for sign around my place. I found it right enough. A wash about a 1/2 mile away. Tracks of 9 ponies headed south toward the hills. I want that Cheyenne dog brought in and hung up where I can see it.
Sergeant Gorse?
Yo!
Go look up Quanto. He says there's a band of Cheyenne in the Laramie foothills. I want to talk to their head man. Find out where they are, pick out 10 good men for the patrol, including you.
Yes, sir.
You'll make provision for me to go with you, Captain.
There won't be much in the way of provision, Major, but you're welcome, sir. Coons, you go tell your story to Major Daggett. As soon as I get word from him, we'll move out.
All right, Captain.
Oh, Coons. How old is your stepson?
9 years next month, if he's still alive.
Same age Wasaya's son would have been. Well, if they're together, I don't think you have to worry about Billy being anything but alive and well.
You got a lot to learn about Cheyenne, Captain.
Maybe you could teach me. You want to come along?
I'll go talk to the Major.
There goes a man with a bad conscience.
What about your own, Captain? You seem to feel more sympathy for the savage than you do for this poor man who's lost a child. I hardly think your attitude right for a man in your position.
I suppose it won't look good in your survey report, sir, but there's a popular idea out here I've never been able to swallow and keep down. That whatever a white man does to an Indian is all right, but whatever an Indian does is all wrong.
You and I are soldiers, Captain. We do not set policy. We follow it.
Yes, sir.
Fast water Quarto talked about just around this bend, Captain.
Yeah, I know. I caught some beautiful trout in that stretch.
That's where their camp's supposed to be.
Hadn't you better order carbines at the ready? A show of preparedness, Captain?
Little late for that, Major. They've had their eye on us for at least an hour.
Why do you bring a small force into a situation like this? Surely you don't trust them not to catch us in ambush.
I don't trust them, Major. I know them. The best place for ambush was about 2 miles back. We've gone beyond the point of carbines at the ready. There you are, Major, up ahead, waiting for us. Those are dog soldiers. Some of the best mounted fighters in the world.
We are well outnumbered, Captain.
We always are. Now, they'll come in to meet us at full run and screaming like banshees. That's their way. They don't want you to know whether they mean to be friendly or to open your throat. If we had our carbines ready, their run wouldn't be exactly friendly. Patrol! Halt! Keep your hands away from your weapons, men, unless I tell you different. Stay relaxed the way you do on the parade ground when I want you to be alert.
You should have ordered out your full troop, Captain.
Captain, here they come.
I see them, Gores. Act like this happens every day, men. Just rest easy in your saddles and talk to each other.
Captain, order carbines at the ready.
That an order, Major?
It's common sense. Show them we'll fight.
Don't draw your pistol, Major. You'll spook them for sure, waving that thing around. They'd have opened up by now if they were going to. Bye. Who is chief among you? Which of you is Wasaya?
I am Wasaya. Why do the soldiers come to us? We have done no wrong.
I brought you your scalping knife, Wasaya. Here.
Where is the one called Coons? The woman killer? The child killer? Did he die of fear when he found my sign?
Why, that insolent beggar.
He says that you came for vengeance. And that you stole his son.
I have stolen no son.
You were at his house, and now the boy is missing.
I have stolen no boy.
Oh, he's lying, Captain.
What does the high soldier say?
I say you are lying.
Major.
I speak true.
We'll search your camp and find out how much truth.
No, we want no soldiers in our camp.
Ain't there any way you can stop me, Captain?
You ever been able to stop me, Gores?
Well, I'd sure try if you went off half-cocked like he is.
Always when the soldiers come to our camp, there is trouble. We want no trouble. We are at peace.
You don't want us in your camp because you're lying. The search is going to be made. And if you resist us, I'll see the whole 2nd Cavalry out to do the job.
Bandu Nikano!
Patrol! Carbines! At the ready!
Boot your carbines!
What was that, Captain?
Sorry, Major. They're going back to their camp.
Oh. Those insolent. Well, at least I've seen a prime example of what a soft policy brings about. The hostiles move up here from the 7th Cavalry area. Undoubtedly, they rest, repair equipment, and go back to take up the attack again.
Some of them do, some of them don't. There are good ones and bad ones with these people, same as there are with whites.
Well, until such time as a magician is attached to the 2nd who can distinguish between the two, Captain, pressure should be exerted against all of them. We'll return to the fort.
I'm going to recommend that at least two troops are assigned to this matter until that boy's recovered.
With your permission, sir, I'll stay here. Sergeant Gorse will take command of the patrol and escort you.
Why on earth stay here? I need your statement at the fort.
You have plenty of other witnesses, sir. Before you come back with two troops of cavalry, I'd sort of like to see what one man can do in that camp.
You're thinking as an individual again, Captain.
A hard habit to break, sir. If it doesn't work, it'll make a strong point in your survey report.
Very well. I trust you don't expect commendation on your stubbornness. I do plan to make reference to your unmilitary behavior.
Be better if we could send old Brass Shoulders in alone.
Watch your manner, Sergeant.
Don't you want me to stay with you?
Thank you, Gorse, but I don't need you. This may look crazy, but I don't think I'll run into any trouble.
That young'un's in there, you will, sir.
No, I don't figure he is. I've been thinking. If I was Wasaya and had kidnapped the boy, I sure wouldn't have left a knife to point the finger at me. And I would have hightailed it out of these parts a long time before this.
I sure hope you're right, Captain.
Sergeant, I'm ready to go.
Not far enough.
Watch your manners, Gorse.
Yes, sir. And good luck.
Those are probably coconuts right there for the horses.
For the horses galloping.
Yeah, coconuts. All right, that's the first portion of Fort Laramie with Raymond Burr. More after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
I guess it's time for Stump the Host, right?
Yeah.
Right, Roger?
Yeah.
All right, let's see what you got.
Cut down a tree in the back. There's a stump there for you.
Yeah.
Okay, so I've got a couple of them, but I'll do this one.
All right.
Not considered a spinoff.
Right.
This fictional star of their own radio program appeared on another very popular radio program in late 1944.
That's the question?
Yeah.
Wait, so give it to me again. All right. Not considered a spinoff.
This right. fictional star of their own radio program appeared during a year in another very famous radio program as one of the characters. Would you like a hint?
I'll take a hint.
Okay. So the series this character appeared in took place on Wistful Vista Drive.
Well, there you
I was
go.
Gonna. Okay. Are you talking about Alice Darling or are you talking about Beulah?
You got it.
Well, Beulah did spin off into it. That's what threw me. Beulah did spin off into her. It was Marlon Hurt starred as Beulah.
Correct.
And he had his own show.
Before?
He was the maid on Fibber McGee and Molly. It was Beulah the maid.
Right.
On Fibber McGee and Molly.
Mm-hmm.
And then it spun off into its own series.
Yes, but he had that character prior to Fibber McGee and Molly.
Oh, okay. He had the character prior?
Yeah, the character.
When we say, people are probably wondering, because it was Marlon Hurt was a white man playing a black maid on Fibber McGee and Molly.
Yeah.
And if you heard he sounded just like a woman. Like Lisa can play a man.
Right.
She can play a man.
I can.
She can do it.
And then who was the famous actress that eventually took over the role?
Well, Hattie McDaniel.
Boom.
Hattie McDaniel played it. There was actually a couple of actresses that played the role, but she was the most famous because she was an Academy Award winner, I believe, or at least nominated. Did she win, or was
I
she just?
I believe she did win for Gone with Best the Supporting
Wind?
Actress.
In Gone with the Wind.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. Could be. You may be right on that one, but that's a very good trivia question. You had me.
I didn't want to give too much away.
A little bit stumped
because I know how smart you are. About
I would
this
have
stuff.
To say that I did not get that right because if you have to give me a clue, then it doesn't. I don't think I should.
Yeah, but
have
I
to
really
have a
clue. Didn't. Because I said this character. I didn't say she.
But,
so that didn't give anything
I'm
away.
A tough grader, though. So if the roles were reversed, I wouldn't have given it to you. So I'm going to take a...
All right, well,
like
there
a
you go.
Wah, wah.
That's okay.
So I'm 0 for 1.
Ooh.
Roger has me. 0-1.
Mark the tape.
All right, so tomorrow got a couple more chances, three more chances.
I've already got the other one, and it's going to be, I'm going to give you someone's name.
Doozy?
I'm going to give you someone's name, and you have to identify who they are.
Okay, sounds good. We'll do it tomorrow. All right, time now for the conclusion to Fort Laramie.
Easy.
Help, soldier! You do not come in our camp.
Then come out here, Wasaya, so we can talk without being bothered by others.
Do we talk about the son I did not steal?
I believe you. I believe that you didn't steal him.
Your high soldier is blind. His words cut like flint.
He's new to this country. He has much to learn.
He went back. Does he bring more soldiers to attack us?
That's what's in his mind now. It'll take a day, so you have time to move your camp.
Strange words from a soldier. Why do you stand with me when the high soldier says I lie?
I've heard much of you, Wasaya. If you were going to steal a son, you'd do it better than this.
I say this. The days are gone when a son brought only gladness to his father. Now the father looks to the day when his son reaches manhood and sees nothing but sadness and hunger and fighting a war that will not be won. Some nights, when sleep runs away from me, I think of my son, and I am happy that he is not with me to share the trouble that follows us. I would steal no son. I have nothing to give him.
Do you truly want peace, Wasaya?
A peace with honor, yes. We are tired of fighting and running.
This is a small thing, a missing child, when you measure it against the bigness of the trouble that we're all in, all the tribes, all the army units. But it's a thing that could stir everything up again. Word from the major could go to Washington.
His words from his mind.
They'd be believed because no other words could go to say they were wrong. I'd like to stop it, Wasaya. Would you help me?
How would a Cheyenne help a soldier?
If you and I could find the boy and take him back, everyone would know that you were a man of honor and truth. And that you lead a peaceful band.
Then the high soldier's words would be lies.
You'd be right, and he'd be wrong.
For that, I would help. But how?
Have any other new bands moved into this section that could have taken the boy?
One Shoshone and one from my tribe.
Could you find out if they have him?
Yeah.
Will you do it?
I will.
While you do that, I'll try and get a line on him. Will you meet me in the wash near Coon's place at sunrise tomorrow?
Do you know what you asked me to do? To help the man who killed my son and my wife?
I know, Wasaya.
We meet at sunrise, soldier.
Hold.
I am here, soldier.
You hide well. What did you learn?
The boy is not with the Shoshones and not with the Cheyenne.
Then we have another way to go. He has an uncle in the Rock River settlement. He's talked to some of his young friends about going to live with him. He told them the trail he'd take. If I put you on it, could you pick up his sign and follow it?
I have followed older sign.
We'll go then.
He fell here.
All right. Look there, a piece of cloth. I'd say he has torn clothing and a sore knee.
He rested here. Slept, I think. See, the grass is pressed down.
He's traveled a long way for an 8-year-old.
I think not much farther than this. He started very slow from here. There, soldier.
Billy? Billy? We're going to take you home.
No, I won't go back.
It's all right, Billy.
Who's he?
His name is Wasiah. He's a friend of mine.
You are a good, strong boy to come this far. If I had a son, I would hope he would be so strong.
You've got a nasty bruise on your face, Billy. You must have taken a bad fall.
He hit me.
Who did?
My paw. With a stick. He hit me till I ran away.
Here. Let's see into your shirt. Yeah, he sure did hit you, didn't he?
I won't go back. My paw hit me again.
Come on, come on. Stand up, Billy. Look, I don't blame you for running away. I guess I'd have done the same thing.
I won't go back.
If you want to live with your uncle, I think we can work it out.
In Rock River?
Yeah. And instead of trying to get there all by yourself, how would you like it if you could ride with the cavalry?
By myself? On a horse?
Yes. Horse all your own. Now, you ready to start back?
I won't stay with my paw.
You won't have to.
Come here, boy. You ride with me on my pony.
Oh. No, I don't want to.
Why, sure you do, Billy. Think what you can tell your friends. I'll bet none of them have ridden with a real Cheyenne warrior. Come on now. Show them how brave you are.
Come here, boy. Am I strong enough to lift you up? He not know the feel of a white man on his back.
You all right, Billy?
Does this pony run fast?
Oh, yes. Faster than prairie fire.
Hang on!
Wait, soldier.
They're forming the two troops for the big search.
I go no farther.
I know how you feel, because I felt the same way riding into your camp. But the major from Washington won't believe you had a part of this unless you ride in with me. You have my word that everything will be all right.
I go on your word.
Right up to the major, Wasiah. Captain Quince reporting, sir.
Well, the savage did steal the boy. In spite of his surrender, he's to be punished.
This is no surrender.
Give me the details, Captain.
I'd rather you ask the boy, sir.
All right, son. What did he do to you?
He didn't steal me. He found me. I ran away because my paw hit me with a stick. He does it lots of times, and I won't go back. I just won't.
Order the troops dismissed.
Yes, sir.
Prepare to dismount.
Come on, Billy. We'll find you something to eat. I'd stay out of the 7th Cavalry territory for a while. The high soldier is going to be moving that way.
There is very far place where there are many antelope. I think my people are hungry for antelope.
My thanks go with you.
Mine stay with you. You grow strong, boy. One day you can beat your stepfather. I leave my vengeance with you.
Hang on!
Goodbye!
Come on, Billy.
Captain?
Yeah, Gorse?
Old Ironside sure don't want to admit there's such a thing as a good Injun, does he?
He's a better soldier than we are, Sergeant.
What?
He operates strictly from the book. Maybe in the next situation, the book will be right.
Fort Laramie is produced and directed by Norman McDonald and stars Raymond Burr as Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry, with Vic Perrin as Sergeant Gorse. The script was specially written for Fort Laramie by Gil Dowd, with sound patterns by Bill James and Ray Kemper, musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Featured in the cast were Lawrence Dobkin, Clayton Post, Ralph Moody, Jack Moyles, and Richard Beals.
Company, attention! Dismiss!
Next week, another transcribed story of the Northwest frontier and the troopers who fought under Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry. Each Monday through Friday evening, CBS Radio rings you in on the fabulous adventures of insurance investigator Johnny Dollar. Just by decoding the cryptic items in his expense account, you'll learn how a dime spent in a phone booth can lead to a scene of the wildest suspense. Then on to a sum spent for an airplane ticket or an item for a new shoelace. And again, you'll find yourself smack in the middle of a thrill-packed situation. Each new adventure moves the story forward to its dramatic payoff when Johnny Dollar solves yet another case of arson, fraud, or murder. Every Monday through Friday night over most of these same stations, hear yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Well, we have Johnny Dollar tomorrow.
Tonight, actually. We have a, five-part adventure tonight.
Yeah, yours truly, Johnny Dollar, will have a five-parter this next show, which will be 253 in the series of the WGN Radio Theater. That is Fort Laramie with Lost Child, April 1st, 1956. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break, then it's more, so stay with us.